Health Radio FM Celebrity Series. I'm talking today with Dr. Janet Taylor. She's a community psychiatrist in New York City, the Bronx, and Queens. Janet's a frequent contributor to CBS The Morning, CBS The Today Show, Good Morning America. We see her on CNN, MSNBC, Oprah, Family Circle Magazine. You're a very busy lady, Dr. Janet. How are you?
I'm great, Tammy. How are you?
I'm doing so good. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm really excited about talking to you today, A, because I've known you for many, many years, and I've never talked to you on a professional level, so I'm excited about that. But, Janet, today's topic that I'd like to talk about with you has to do with mental health, and that's something that you're just so amazingly versed and submersed in, and people go to you for your opinion. We always talk about physical health and how we eat well and how to exercise, but on our show, we've never really touched on mental health. And just in a nutshell, what's your definition of mental health?
Well-being. Well, you know, first, the World Health Organization says there's no physical health without mental health. And to your point, we don't talk enough about what positive mental health is. And positive mental health and overall, you know, a good well-being is the fact that you are able to work successfully, you know, have relationships that are healthy, take care of yourself, and have a positive outlook on life. And what we know is that individuals that have a chronic disease like diabetes or high blood pressure, being depressed, being sad, worsens every medical illness. So the two go together, and it's time that we talk about physical health, mental health, and also spirituality as one entity.
Absolutely. I know that, you know, let me ask you a question. Is the health of your mind, is it hereditary? I mean, I look at my family, and I have a bunch of nervous nillies in my family. My mom, you know, suffered from anxiety at one point in her 50s. For one point, it was debilitating for a year. My dad had anxiety attacks. My brother suffered anxiety attacks. Is that part of your mental health, is it hereditary?
Well, I mean, when you think about mental health, you can think about personality, and certainly there are aspects of personality that can be passed down or be hereditary. You mentioned anxiety. Also, there are positive traits in terms of agreeableness or being conscientious and things like that. So there are positive aspects of personality that can be passed. The other part is what you grow up with in terms of role models, how you see people handle issues in your family. You can pick on that aspect. And then there is that genetic component that can be part of mental health in the sense of there are certain diseases like depression or schizophrenia, bipolar disease, or bipolar disorder, where if you have a family member that has it, it can increase the risk of you having it. Not that just because you have a mother or father who is depressed that you're going to be depressed, but certainly we know that that kind of genetic pool can increase the risk of you being depressed.
I've also been told by a friend of mine, Dave Dozois, who's the head of psychiatrics at Toronto University, and he said that a lot of it is also your social well-being, that, you know, if your mother's not a social person, yet you, Tammy, are a very social person, being social enough, going and surrounding yourself and doing things is part of your mental health well-being as well.
Well, it's true. I mean, if you look at, let's say, aging and successful aging, it's not just your physical health, but it's your ability to be a positive thinker and also the quality of your social relationships, knowing that as we get older, we need less people around us, but the quality of those people around us need to be, you know, at most in the sense of they make us better.
Sure. I think, too, that, you know, we look at mental health and well-being, and some people say, you know, I grew up in a house where I had great parents and I had, you know, a great upbringing and everything was wonderful. My parents loved each other, and so naturally my mental health is fine. But then they get into maybe a bad marriage, or they have a child who suffers from substance abuse, and that's when I think that your own personal health, mental health, is important to take care of. I know women who are very strong women, but they're put up against serious challenges that test their ability to be able to cope.
And life happens. And so the issue is not that you can control every situation that happens to you, but one big factor is how you respond to life's challenges. And so healthy coping is part of having good mental health. I mean, most of us are stressed. Most of us are stretched. But it's really, you know, can you balance that with regular diet and exercise and being able to surround yourself, again, with people who are positive? You know, do you know who to go to for your resources? Because life is unpredictable and you know, things happen that are out of your control.
Do stress levels seem higher today than they were 20 years ago? You just hear stress being used so often nowadays.
I mean, by all indication, people are, you know, in the U.S., I don't know the Canadian statistics, but I would imagine it's pretty similar, but in the U.S., probably 55% of people report that their stress levels were higher than they were the year before. And what's interesting is, you know, often we think, you know, as people get older, they get crankier, they get more depressed and stressed, but it's that group of 20 to 30-year-olds that report that they have the highest stress levels. And part of that, it's presumed because in terms from a sense of purpose and meaning and kind of being in this generation that, you know, you're not sure if you're going to have a job at the same place forever and where do I go? So not having a sense of purpose and trying to figure things out can be stressful as well.
So, I mean, people use the terms very loosely in coping, you know, diet and exercise, but mm-hmm. give us more, you know, ways of coping with stress and being mm-hmm. calmer.
So, I mean, if you think your body, the definition of stress is really how your body responds to any demand placed upon it. So it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, you're going across the street and all of a sudden a car whizzes by you. I mean, your brain is taking in every single action that's happening in your daily life, every sound, everything it seems, or that it sees. So, there are things that your brain's taking in that may be stressful to your body that you're not even aware of. So diet and exercise certainly can help keep your body in balance, but the other thing is to really be centered and focus, being mindful and aware of things that are happening so that when you notice that maybe your heart's racing faster or you notice that, you know, you have this feeling in the pit of your stomach or your hands are sweaty, that you can calm yourself down with deep breathing. And so in addition to diet and exercise, taking 10 deep breaths through your nose with your mouth closed, breathing really deeply is important when you realize that you're stressed, being able to think positive thoughts, obviously being able to, as much as you can, take yourself out of situations that make you stressful, and then really looking at how you cope. I mean, some people cope by saying, okay, you know, I made it through the day, I got my kids in bed, I'm going to eat, you know, half a pie, or I'm going to drink, you know, two or three glasses of wine or a whole bottle of wine, or, you know, use drugs to help you relax and come down and relax and be less stressed. And unhealthy coping is really something that is as dangerous as the stressful situations themselves.
Sure. I find that my stress or anxiousness that I get from a positive scenario, maybe a great interview or I'm going to be on TV, mimics the same kind of stressful feeling I get when something bad is going to happen. What is that relationship between just the anxiety of good and bad?
Mm-hmm. It's your thoughts. I mean, you know, to your point, if you were in a plane and it falls 500 feet, you're going to get this feeling in the pit of your stomach and your thoughts going to be like, oh my goodness, we're going to die. If you're a skydiver and you jump 500 feet, same feeling in the pit of your stomach, but you're like, oh yeah, this is what I paid for. So that's why it's so important to be mindful and self-aware, because your body, the sensations can be the same. What you attribute it to, you know, the power that you have is to say, okay, my body's telling me something. My thought can be, okay, I got this, or, oh my gosh, I'm going to panic. And people who are able to make the right decisions in very stressful, tense situations by saying, you know, I anticipate this, I'm not going to overreact, I'm going to handle it, tend to have more stable stress levels. So sure. If you think about Navy SEALs who, you know, or could be in the most dangerous situations, they're able to stay focused because A, they've trained, B, they like it, but, you know, C, they're able to say, okay, everything I'm feeling, I'm going to use that to help me reach my target.
So you mean before I go on stage and I'm talking to myself, that's normal, I tell myself, listen, you want to be here, you've asked to be here, this is what you're looking for, and exactly. I'm standing there talking to myself, but I find mm-hmm. that that's how I get myself to calm down before I do something exciting. So that's normal. successful.
It's absolutely normal. I mean, it's a sign of strength. It shows that you're paying attention to the situation because you're, again, your body's telling you you're nervous. And you're saying, okay, body, I got you. I hear you. I know I'm nervous, but this is what I want to do. So then you can focus on what it is you have to do instead of reluctantly feeling like, you know, you're being dragged into something that you don't want. You put yourself in that situation. Embrace it.
Exactly. Janet, you and I are both mothers, and we're passionate about our daughters being successful, strong, powerful, young, and you know, your daughters are now in their 20s. Mm-hmm. You know, we see in the...
Thanks for reminding me, Tammy.
I know, but you know what, Dawn, I was just saying to you earlier that you still look so amazing. You know, absolutely
okay,
amazing. That's what
thanks.
I love about
right.
you. Amazing. Our kids grow up so fast, and we have these girls that, you know, we're putting into this crazy world nowadays. One of the topics that you had tweeted about earlier, you know, without, I think, passing direct blame, but your tweet today was childhood sexual abuse is real. It's painful to hear folks minimize accusations or try to rationalize them because they are actors. And so we're seeing on TV right now that one teacher who the girl was abused when she was 12 and she recorded it on YouTube, and I congratulate her and applaud her for doing that. You have the Woody Allen scenario. You have R. Kelly. Why do we as normal people still support these celebrities in what they do? Like, I, you know, R. Kelly, I mean, he's got a beautiful voice and I love his music. What, do we still listen to him? Why do we still listen to him? What are your thoughts
you
on
know,
that?
Well, I mean, I think how people choose to support a celebrity who has been accused of or even convicted of bad behavior certainly is an individual choice. That's related to values and beliefs. However, I think, you know, if there are celebrities that we follow, it's usually because we like them and we want to hold them to a standard that we think is higher than ourselves. For some reason, we may feel like not necessarily they're better than us, but they have a life that's different. And so we will give them the benefit of the doubt when, in fact, just because you're famous, just because you're a celebrity doesn't mean that you shouldn't be held to the same standard that, you know, you or I or your kids are held to. So there's just this notion of giving them a pass that I think does a celebrity a disservice, but certainly, you know, I think as a community and, you know, as a nation, as a country, we have to look at, you know, who our role models are and why can't we hold their feet to the fire when they do something that, you know, you or I couldn't do.
Or shouldn't do. I mean, I'm just, you think of children and that's, there's a lot of things mm-hmm. that I can let slide, but then I look at the, you know, these accusations against these young girls and boys. I mean, you look at Theo Fleury, the hockey player. He was so brave to come forward after so many years and talk about, you know, his abuse as a young hockey player. But he went through tremendous, you know, drug addictions and problems as an abused child.
Well, you know, I can tell you in my practice, and I do community psychiatry, I've worked primarily inner city, Bronx, Harlem, but even when I was doing my training and was out at more in more affluent neighborhoods, almost 70% of my women, the patients I saw, had been sexually abused or assaulted or molested, and maybe 30-40% of the men, not as high as the women. But it is so prevalent in our society. It's not likely to be reported. There's such shame. There's such guilt. You know, I can't tell you how many young girls told their mothers about what happened, and the mothers would accuse them of lying or stay silent because of whatever situation. And it is such a insult to the body, no matter what age you are, and to your mental self-esteem and feeling unsafe, that it truly is, in my opinion, a public health risk factor and epidemic is the amount of sexual abuse and unwanted sexual contact that happens to women and also to men.
Well, I just think back to, I think that I've been very lucky as a child. I mean, I grew up in BC Housing, which is the projects, and lots of bad things happened to lots of young girls, but I had parents who were very aware of where I was at all times. But still, you know, I think back to a time when I was maybe 8 or 9 years old, and this man in the courtyard was clearly intoxicated and grabbed me and started to, you know, undo his pants, and second I was able to get away, and I, you know, ran for my life, and the police came. But we never pressed charges because my parents didn't want me to go through this the court system because they thought it would be so bad for me. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, it's lucky you were able to get away. But, you know, we often think of this Chester the molester, some random person who's grabbing, you know, these young girls, young men. And more frequently, it's people who are in the home. It may not be a father, you know, or a brother or an uncle, but it's individuals who have been allowed in people's home, whether it's babysitters who let them in, whether it's mothers or fathers. So, any incident is too much. But we can't just think focus on strangers. We have to look at who we are allowing to be around our children in an unsupervised way. And even if they have the trust of the individuals there, when your child tells you that, you know, something has happened that made them feel suspicious or didn't make them feel good, or, like, believe them. As parents, we need to believe our kids when they tell us something.
Why do we not believe them? I mean, I say we, but... You hear of so many cases of, like, this young girl who's 12, you know, 20, 15 years later, she's talking about this teacher who had done this. And why do we not talk about it? Why do we not report it?
You know, as some mothers feel guilty that they weren't able to protect their children, in some cases the mothers themselves were sexually abused and haven't dealt with their own incident that's happened. If you have a mother who may not be economically stable and is dependent on the one who's accused, you know, for rent or for money or, you know, to even, you know, be a father to her children, she may be hesitant to say anything. And then the other thing is, I mean, adults abuse their authority. And even, you know, they're teenagers who abuse young kids too. So they tell them, if you say something, I'll hurt you, I'll hurt your family, or, you know, yell and say, you're making this up. And so a lot of times kids are, and even teenagers are discredited. So they learn to just keep silent. And, you know, they feel like the silence can take all the pain away, but it
doesn't. No, it doesn't. I just look at people around me that I know who have been in those scenarios, and it's just sad because it may have happened to somebody 40, 50, sometimes 60 years prior to, but it still impacts them as an adult, and it's so sad to me. Explain to me, Janet, about people who have been abused or assaulted as a child, suppress that memory, and then it comes up again later on. How does that work?
Well, I mean, the one thing people should know is that repressed memories are not false memories. And just because you didn't have an active recollection of it and it comes back because it's triggered, whether if you have kids and they, you know, are the age that you were when you were abused, or it could be a sound, it could be even hearing about, you know, Dylan Farrell, can trigger some memories of what happened. And if you think about the brain, I mean, the brain, as I mentioned earlier, is taking everything in. But it also tries to protect us. And sometimes when there is a memory that is so painful, the brain certainly keeps it but stores it away. And so these repressed memories are ones that people, you know, the brain subconsciously is kind of tucked away in a box, even though it's still there. And it's really meant so, you know, people can function. Because if you think about it, if from an evolutionary standpoint, if we allowed our fears, like every time we were going to do something, if we thought about something that made us afraid or, you know, could have hurt us, like most of us would be immobile and stay in the house.
Exactly.
So we have to be willing to let go of those fears and those memories that stop us from functioning in a way that allow us to be successful.
The brain is a very powerful thing. Janet, we're starting to run out of time. I wanted to talk to you again sometime in the future if you could come back to the show. You've got so much information to share with us. And I think that one of the topics that I think has been a big concern about mental health is, you know, children nowadays and ADHD and the drugs that they're taking and their stress and anxiety levels. I'd love to talk about that again sometime in the future.
Well, my pleasure. I'd love to be back on with you, Tammy.
Janet, you're awesome. Have a great day, and I appreciate you
Thanks.
Coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thanks, Janet.